This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Today we are talking about one of what I believe are we, is it too soon to say it's a trend? Raymond Capaldi, a very well-known chef who's now at the helm of Wonder Pies. Welcome to the program, Raymond.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
You have been a regular on the show in its former format as Cravings with Pete Dillon.
Yes.
And he would have been interviewing you, of course, about your former life as a very fine dining chef. Was that when you had Hare and Grace in the city?
That's right, yeah.
So take us through the whole story arc. When did you get your first apron?
Well, I got my first apron in the British Transport hotels, which were really brutal in the days. I think the SAS...
It was a bit of a calf, wasn't it?
Really? Yeah.
Just it was, sort of greasy spoon calf?
What, the British Transport hotels?
Yeah.
Could be. in the staff canteen, yeah. But the hotels portrayed very hard training. The SAS used to come in and try and pick up people to see if they wanted to join the army because it was pretty brutal. Go around the kitchens and ask anybody they wanted to join.
And it was easy in the SAS then?
It was, yeah. At least you got days off and good sleep sometimes, you know what I mean? But that's the British Transports were famous hotels. There were about five at that time. I started off
in very fine dining.
Yeah, very fine dining, very luxurious six-star hotels. Big hotels, you know, like Gleneagles, the Meridian in London, Caledonian, North British Hotel in Edinburgh. And Caledonian was the one I started. And I started there and then I went down to the Dorchester in London.
Famous, very famous.
In Park Lane. And then
storied hotel.
Yeah, oh, it was a beautiful hotel. And just, I mean, look, the carpet at that time cost 50,000 a square metre because it was all handmade and hand-sewn.
And the tears of unicorns.
Yeah, all that stuff. It was a fantastic time, old London.
Yeah.
You know, and then I just went on to then France and then back to, again, British Transport Hotels, which was the Gleneagles Hotel. And then,
oh, gorgeous.
And all there. So I've been through the big hotels and then I come here and started off at the Regent Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
And ran the Regent Hotels and he's probably one of the youngest head chefs there, but then it turned into Sofitel.
Did you come to Australia for the role or did you come to Australia for other reasons?
Yeah, I came to visit a friend, you know, to look for a job in the 80s when there was that big crash, you know, there wasn't much jobs going around, so I ended up going to Hong Kong to work for 2 years and then put in for a transfer back here again because I loved the scene that much, the food scene, you know, it was really, really ripe at that time.
So what really appealed to you in that food scene?
I think that everybody understood food. I mean, you know, it's in Scotland, you know, if you say you're a chef, they'll say, oh, can you cook a good steak? You know what I mean? It's whereas here, a lot of people know and appreciate good food, you know, and good coffee and the scene. It was just great.
But so you found your tribe?
Yeah, I found the tribe. That's it, you know. And in Scotland, you just... Everybody just thinks you cook steaks as a chef.
But that's changed now. Scotland isn't the same as it was in the 80s.
I wouldn't say it's changed now because they're still doing that 80s type food. You know, it's that Marco Pier white food. It's still in that. You know, most of the place. No, I would say no. Scotland is still in that. London's changed a little bit, but I just...
Our British food scene's pretty sexy at the moment.
I have heard it's changed a lot.
Yeah. So I think Edinburgh's still in that 80s Scotland style.
You know, we were talking about the 80s food scene here last weekend by default. We were talking Japan. We got onto the subject of the Japanese slipper, which is the cocktail.
Yeah.
And so, of course, I had to have a look around and discover where the Japanese cocktail... The Japanese slipper cocktail came from, and it was actually created at Mieta's.
Oh, wow.
First place.
The beautiful Mieta.
Beautiful Mieta. And then, of course, I said, well, I had drunk Japanese cocktails at Mieta's myself.
Yeah.
So that was a fun discovery. And I think that the obsession we have with the Melbourne food scene now, I guess a lot of people forget, or perhaps weren't even around during the 80s in the food scene here, which was not as accessible to everybody.
How do you mean?
Well, from...
Elitist? Too much money involved?
Well, I guess there was a lot of money, but it wasn't as egalitarian, shall we say. Now, that is from my point of view. I was young then, so...
A young woman.
A young woman, so I wasn't eating out in... I was drinking at Miata's, though.
The Japanese
But, I mean, obviously we've had a massive... the food scene in Melbourne has just grown humongously in that period of time, and it must be nice to have been a part of that journey.
Yeah, without, I mean, look, Miata's, I think at that time there was all lots of institutions and where fine dining was rife, you know, and then now it's become that, you know, the world changes, everybody wants to do different stuff, and you need to educate people more about, you know, we can do great food without all that hype. And for me, I don't like that. Even though I've done fine dining now, I cannot go out and do 12 courses. You know, I want to go to a restaurant, I want to be in and out. I don't know if that's because I've got older, or I just cannot sit at the table that long now. You know what I mean? I just want three good courses.
Well, we've seen a lot of white tablecloths whisked off tables lately. Yeah. And I think that, when you work in hospitality, it's the removal. It's almost like when the white tablecloth comes off, already the venue feels much more casual, much more relaxed. And we have seen an increase of really high quality food in relaxed environments.
Yeah.
And now we're going one step further. When did you start Hare and Grace? I'm kind of interrupting the
art. Yeah, I sort of started Hare and Grace. It was in two, when was it? It was around about 2016. I've had it for about longer than that. Yeah, I don't know the exact date, but we were there for 6 years, and that was the whole story behind Hare and Grace. We wanted to do fine dining service wise, because I find that service is more important than the food sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that
absolutely.
People will always forgive an okay meal if you have great service.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they'll never forgive them if you have a great meal and bad service. They'll never go back. And I always find that, you know. And
I had that experience last night.
Yes.
At one of Melbourne's leading bars, the staff was shocking.
Yeah.
And I think they were tired and grumpy.
Yeah.
And it reflected. And that's how our evening started at 6 o'clock for our staff thing. I won't mention the place. The food was amazing when it came out.
Yeah.
But the attitude of the staff needed a reset.
Yeah. And this is where I can never understand staff at Christmas.
Yeah.
Every staff all year, they want hours, they want hours, they want hours. And as soon as Christmas comes and they get all the hours, they're all miserable and all, because the place is making money, they're busy, and they get tired. It's that crazy Christmas time, and it's bad, you know?
And I think the behaviour of the punters has got a lot to be desired.
Oh, yeah,
and I think there's quite a big campaign about respecting people in hospitality and retail this Christmas.
Oh,
and
all right.
I really endorse that, because a lot of people caught up a lot of flack for stuff that's got nothing to do with it.
It's crazy.
Oh,
it's crazy. People are quite entitled.
Everybody goes Christmas crazy, stir crazy, and it's like the end of the world is coming near.
Yeah, but don't treat retail or hospitality stuff with disrespect.
Exactly. You got to respect people like it's your brother, your sister, your mother, your father, and that's how you treat everybody.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the Featured Providers section within the iTunes Store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
We are enjoying the pleasure and conversation today with Raymond Capaldi, formerly of Hare and Grace and other venues, and now Mr. Wonder Pies. Now, Raymond, obviously I think that there's been a really big move, as we were talking about, and a change. When did you decide to go into pies?
Well, we got bought out the lease at Hare and Grace, and I sort of took a two-year retirement plan.
Cool, that sounds nice.
I should have stuck to, actually. And then they decided that I was doing this consultancy job for a big catering company, and I thought I needed to make this pie, because what they were selling in their outlets was terrible, this pie, you know. And basically I came up with this little pot pie, and I thought, well, this is good. These are good. So someone else was making them for me at that time, and I decided to say, you know what, I'll do this as a little sideline. It started to grow and grow and grow, and then I thought, you know what, I should go into business doing this. Probably one of the worst mistakes I ever made. But anyway, it grew and grew and grew, and it's been a whole new learning for me on food manufacturing. It's a different game from the restaurant game. It's another game that you've got to be well on your costs and breaking down lots. There's lots of different avenues to get your price for that. Whereas in a restaurant, it's a set price. Mm. You know your costs, but there's a lot of out there. Variances on food manufacturing.
So quite a bit more of a complex. Yes. It started out as a hobby, yeah. And it's turned into quite a little logistical.
Logistical, yeah, it's very logistical. We got really busy, and you know, it's a consistency as well. And we always say, you know, we're a great pie for the price. I mean, I can make the best one, well, hopefully make it the best pie in the world, or the best pie. I can really put lots of effort into it, but you always got to remember the cost is there. Mm. So we always say it's a great pie for the price and the market we're going for. We don't want to be calling it sustainability and gourmet and all these horrible names. I don't want to be hooked on these names. It's just a great pie for the price, you know.
So when you're talking pies, mm-hmm. Now we've been introduced to these pies, yeah. And I think the word pie would put an idea in someone's head,
yeah.
About, you know, it can be nice, you know, chicken and leek, thanks mum. But your pies are slightly different to that, aren't they?
Yes. So
let's
yes.
walk through what you'll you mean by a pie.
You'll yeah. have to go to our Facebook page, The Escape Hour, to see some of the beautiful pies that Raymond brought us this morning.
So, Raymond, walk us through some of the pies that you're talking about, because I know what you're talking about, the listeners don't.
Yeah, well, this morning you asked me...
They're not 4 and 20.
They're not 4 and 20. But this morning you asked me, why did you stop all your molecular gastronomy and all the science behind my food? But to be honest with you, the pie is another... It doesn't matter what kind of pie it is. It's a structure thing that you got to get right. And my pies are short crust on the bottom with a rough puff pastry on top, and we make it with lard. We don't make it with puff pastry on top because I think you get that heartburn if it's in a pie warmer and it starts to get rancid, it starts to split with the pure butter. We make it with a lard.
Right.
And it can last in that pie warmer for, you know, we say 2 hours, but we don't want it to be... they're popular, yep. So they move. And we wouldn't keep it in there for 2 hours, but if we wanted to, we've actually taken it to 3 hours and testing in the kitchen. And it still produces a great pie.
So what kind of pies?
So the pies, yeah. we to help me keep concentrating on making sure that I'm still interested in just not doing chunky pies,
yeah.
We got a beautiful lasagna pies.
Lasagna.
We do macaroni and chiso with a beautiful bechamel and chiso crumbs on top. We've got a gratin dauphinoise potato. We've got the fougue face, which is confit duck with coffee sauce and parsnips and root vegetables. So
that sounds crazy.
Yeah. Explain a confit duck. Not everyone knows what that is.
A confit duck is being the duck leg is being marinated in salt for 24 hours or 12 hours, whatever you prefer, however salty you want it. And then you confit in its own fat for about another 5 hours, 7 hours, at a really low temperature, and till it starts to come off the bone, and it's still moist, it's beautiful.
And then with coffee sauce.
And with a beautiful coffee sauce, Arabica coffee sauce.
I have heard that duck and coffee is a winning combination.
It's a beautiful, and it sells out every day, this pie, because everybody... I don't know.
It's quite intriguing.
Yeah,
everybody... The combination
it's good,
really,
you know, and it's you know, the salt in the duck heightens the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the sugar. But that's why we started putting sugar in coffee. It heightens the sauce. And the parsnips and the root vegetables are just set all off and takes that sweet, salty, umami flavour.
Yeah,
so
right.
You're getting all the five senses on your tongue and with the sauce. Yeah, it's beautiful.
So, I mean, up until 2 weeks ago, this was all being made out in Bulleen.
Yes.
And 2 weeks ago, you opened Wonder Pies in the city.
Yes, well, it was about a week and a half ago. Yes, we did, and it's been a great success, you know. So we're very happy the way it's going.
Is it fair to say pies are the new falafel? It's the trend food. It's the on point.
Yeah, look at, there seems to be a lot of places that's, you know, you've got the great Prince's Pies, you've got the great Melbourne Pie Shop up in Brunswick there. And it's great, you know, it's great because, and people say, oh, you know, do you not see this as a threat? I never see nothing as a threat, you know. You
just eat every day.
Yeah, and plus you need something to stimulate your growth, you know. You need someone to look upon and test, because yeah, our pies, you know, from our pastry when we first started off to now, to our fillings when we first started off to now, have changed, you know, yeah, and it's changed for the better. And that's because we're eating other people's pies.
We're learning.
And you might say, oh, it's easy to do a pie, but it's not. You know, it's that 85% full of meat, then that 25% of vegetables and sauce. So when you're riding along on a bike, you can eat your pie and put your sauce on, and it stays together. When you get these pies that you bite in and they collapse,
yeah,
it's not great.
Yeah. No, that's not. I mean, I think the thing is also there's so many different levels. The vegetarian versions, the lasagna, yes, versions,
gluten-free.
All these different fillings, and you know, you could buy them, take them, eat them, take them home, cook them later on. If you were going to take a pie home and have it for dinner,
yeah,
do you reckon what's the best way to cook a pie? Because I know I'm going to be taking your lovely pies home. I need to know how to cook them when I get home.
I recommend 170. For about 20 minutes. If it's a 220 gram pie, it's I reckon about 170 for about 20 minutes, and just check it with put a knife in the middle and check it on your tongue or your lips. Yeah. If it's a big family pie, I reckon about 35 minutes. And our pies are all double glazed because, again, I want that double glazed with egg yolk because, I want that bitterness. Now, a lot of people might say, oh, it's a bit dark for me, but, again, I just like that Parisian style.
Right.
Little bit dark on there, so it gets that really bitterness, sweetness as you're biting through the layers, you know. So it's good. That's what I like. So that's why we double egg yolk it.
It's so visceral. Yeah. I can feel biting through the layers as we talk.
Yeah, they look quite amazing. They're on our Facebook pages, Fiona.
They are.
Before.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a really different interpretation to a pie. We've had a message in from Chris. Thank you, Chris. Exactly what we were talking about before, about hospitality people. Everyone in this room has worked in retail part of their life. Chris agrees that some customers treat staff badly, and I've got a real soft hate that because it's just pointless. Chris likes to find out the name of the staff serving them so he can use the name, and makes it more relaxed, and a bad dad joke.
Bad dad joke breaks the ice every time.
Yeah, I think that's and it also shows respect. And as you were saying before about hospitality, it's you can eat food anywhere. Yeah. Uber Eats is, you know, a perfect example of getting restaurant quality food, and you know, you can plate it up yourself at home or eat it out of the container. But it's the experience of great staff that can really make or break a meal.
Without
the whole way through.
Without a doubt.
And treating people badly is...
And a lot of people miscue. It's when we had here in Grace, a lot of people say, oh, don't go into the city, Raymond. The lunches are dead. We ended up doing... Look, the first year in that business was very hard because we were on the other side of the city. But then we started doing 250 lunches and 250 dinners every night, booked out Monday to Friday. That's all we did. We'd done weddings on the Saturday. But the reason why is because we made sure the menu was to what the people wanted in a way that would put a different spin on it. And the service was second to none. And the service is very important for people in restaurants, and people forget this. And all the chefs get all caught up in the food. It's all about the food. No, it's not.
Your front of house staff.
You know, it's the front of house staff.
And it's a talent.
Yes.
Not everybody's got that talent.
It's trying to, I wouldn't like a waiter's job because it's very technical.
Yeah.
Again, if you look at it in a way, it's a very technical job. You know what I mean? It's a hard job.
Well, particularly when you've got a sophisticated menu and you've got to really understand the food.
Yeah.
So you've got to have that passion. But you've also got to be extroverted enough to be able to be a part of a dining experience, whether it be corporate hospitality with a bunch of out-of-town business people, or if it's a romantic dinner, you've got to be able to have a lot of empathy and read the room enough to be able to engage in very different experiences for people and enhance that and make them want to come back, because there's a lot of competition out there.
Oh, yeah, there is. There is. And I just think if you get these key figures, which is not easy, if you get these key figures right, you'll have a successful business.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Our guest today, Raymond Capaldi, very, very prominent restaurateur, someone who gets to eat around the world, but one of your favourite cities is the Big Apple.
It's my spiritual city.
Your spiritual city. You take a bite out of the Big Apple on a regular basis,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I did. I got engaged there 2.5 years ago, and I need to go back there once a month every year because it's such a spiritual place.
So what is it that really binds you to you spiritually? I mean, this is quite extensive, sort of the intellectual and the emotional. This is a real connection you have with it.
I just think there's a hardness and a rawness and there's a smoothness. There's a everything in that city, you know, and it's just the architecture.
It's grand.
Everywhere you look, there's history. There's, you know, the curbs are made with wrought iron, you know, or steel, and the curbs, you know, the pavements are like 1 mile long or 1 mile wide, you know, and it's just, and every street you go to, it's like you're turning into another film set, you know, and it's
that's
the building there have got so much texture and it just makes you believe that you're somewhere else every time you turn the corner.
And of course, teeming with people of all kinds, it's a very exciting city. I lived there for a long time and I love it. And I would have said it was my spiritual home, although unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to get there for the last few years.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we were talking about was, you can visit, and you have visited some of the best fine dining destinations in New York, but that's not necessarily where the heart of New York City lies.
No, it's not. I just find that I just don't want to eat in these places anymore. I don't want to spend all that money and someone tells me to put a jacket on because I don't feel comfortable nowadays in a jacket. I think all my friends that ask me to go to their restaurants here, they'll understand I'll turn up in shorts or turn up in something because I just feel uncomfortable in a shirt and tie now. I just don't want to do it. You know, I'm at that age, so I don't think
it's got to do with age. I think it's got to do with they're not comfortable clothes.
Yes, they're not comfortable clothes to eat a big meal at a 12 courses. And, you know, when you get older, your gut gets a bit bigger. You know, so you got to be comfortable in something. So I like to wear a nice T-shirt that's going to take that
expansion.
A dramatic expansion, yeah. So that's
with a breathable vibe.
Exactly. So I just want to eat a few good courses, and they're the best courses that I can eat. I think your mouth gets tired eating all these courses as well, so I always pick out the little great places in New York. And New York's got so much great places, and everybody will have their pick and their opinion. But, you know, my pick is, I think they're great little places.
So what is it that typifies the New York street food? Because why we like to talk about street food is because it's accessible. Not everybody can afford that $700-$800 a cover for, you know, that grand fine dining at some of those big establishments. Mm-hmm. But when people go, they need to be fueled. They need to see, hear, smell, taste the city.
Yeah. Yeah.
What really typifies a good New York street food to you?
I think it's the real consistency. You know, they're not being there for overnight. They've been there for 25 years, they've been there for 30 years, they've been there for 10 years. It's the consistency of their product and what they live by, you know. And they're finding their tribe in this massive big metropolis of different villages, you know. It's as we say, Greenwich Village and all these other villages. It is a village, and so they know the guy by heart, which adds to the beauty of it. They know probably his kids, and it's the whole taste, and it's using good products, and they make sure that it's served the exact same every day you come. It's the exact same flavour, and I think that typifies New York food.
For a lot of New Yorkers, they don't use kitchens. Every meal is out.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It needs to be
so
accessible.
True.
Yeah.
It needs to be nutritious.
Well,
it needs to be readily available.
Eating
24 hours a day
in New York can be very inexpensive. You can go out and have a fantastic meal for $10, really. Yeah. And the freshness is there because of the turnover, you know, the numbers of people that are simply buying products every day.
Yeah.
Do you have anywhere in particular that you'd like to share? Because just the other day someone emailed me and said, I'm going to New York, I'd love to get some tips, and it's been so long, so I'd love to be able to send them some suggestions.
Well, we'll probably need another hour for the show, but I've got my favourites, and some of these people say, oh, well, that's what everybody else would pick, but these are great places. These are nostalgic places, and they're popular for a reason.
Mm.
Black Seed Bagels is sensational. A really beautiful...
Is that downtown?
Yeah, that's just off Soho.
Yes.
And it's just sensational. I mean, and across the road is Russ and Daughters, which is, you know, the old It's basically caviar, parmesalata, yes. bagels. Again, it's a you walk into the shop and it's like time standing still, 100 years ago.
Yeah,
and they've never changed the decor.
And it's all Russian.
It's all Russian,
Russian Jewish families.
Beetroot.
Yeah,
it's sensational. Yeah,
Polish food is so great. Yeah. I mean, you know, all of those variations,
pierogies.
But it's just time stood still. And Katz Deli is just up there.
Yes,
so for a great Reuben sandwich, it's Katz Deli. And when you go in there, you should only order the... When we went in there, I just ordered everything. I said, I have to have the Reuben, I have to have the brisket. And we ordered so much stuff between two of us, and we just could not eat it. It was like food coma.
But it's very easy to take food away.
Well, we started off at 5 o'clock in the morning at the gym till six, and then we were on the road till about 1 o'clock in the morning just eating. So it was breakfast, early breakfast, midday breakfast, brunch, lunch... afternoon tea, late afternoon tea, and then dinner. So it was pretty full on all the time. Mm.
Just going into a diner is a great experience. You know, getting shouted at, singles at the window.
Yeah,
so true. I was a big fan of Katz Deli, and of course some of those delicious places in the East Village.
Yeah.
And, of course, when I went recently or a few years ago, the size of the portions, of course, is always the mind-blowing thing where you've got a whole side of salmon in the bagel. Anyway, let's continue on with some of your other favourites.
Yeah. And basically there's Baltazar. Now, Baltazar for breakfast and for dinner at night.
So what do they specialise in?
So it's an old institution. It's like this old New York Russian type restaurant. It's very famous all over the world, but it's famous for a reason. You go in there, the guys are all, it's French. I don't know, people say, you know, it's more French than Russian, but I just got this Russian, because I worked in Russia, so it just feels this Russian French, and it's a beautiful old building, Baltazar, and it's so beautiful, and again, you're going back 100 years, you know, and service is, the waiters are, you know, sometimes I feel in America that the waiters are just doing it for the money to get the tips, but when you go into Baltazar, they make you feel special, and that's the thing that misses in a lot of restaurants in Melbourne and in Australia, and I just think Baltazar is the top of my list for breakfast.
That's in Soho.
In Soho, yeah. Yep. It's just, that's because we always stay at our hotel in Soho, and it's our first stop every morning, and that's where we go to eat, is Baltazar. Yep. And the breads and everything that you can think of, you just sit there and you just think, you're in another world.
Absorb the atmosphere.
And it's not that expensive. Mm. You know what I mean? It's just great money and great value for money, and the waiters are absolutely sensational, not up their self.
Now, how about at places like Brooklyn? Do you have some good favourites there?
Roberta's Pizza.
Oh.
Now, this is where, when I went to Katz Deli, I was ill because it was like a 100-degree day.
And New York and
it was stifling. You could have
the building
stuff. Yeah, you could have fried the egg on the pavement that day.
And the building stuff radiating.
Yeah, exactly. And it was so hot.
It's no relief.
And you get dripped on by all the air conditioners as you walk down the street.
And my partner, Jodie, we had the sandwich, and she goes, look, I need to have something to eat. I can't eat another thing. And then we said, Roberta's is here, which is sensational pizza. And, you know, you hear about all these stories about pizza and all that sort of stuff, and you go, ah, well, it's just a pizza, you know. But she says, you should have a bite of this pizza. I goes, it's sensational. I goes, ah, oh, I can't eat. So I had a bite of it, and all of a sudden, it was like this big sign from heaven, I've come alive again. It was, the pizza was absolutely sensational. Now, Roberta's they've got about three places all in one. You can sit in, which is always full. Mm. There's the garden, and then there's the takeaway next door. And this place just hums all day. Busy, 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 busy. And the pizza is sensational. Mm. So in Brooklyn, it is definitely Roberta's.
Mm. So New York-style pizza is different.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've got their own style. Yeah. How would you describe it from a chef's point of view?
Well, it's more cooked. It's sort of like the Neapolitan, but it's more cooked through than the Neapolitan, and it's much more fluffier. But it's just more lighter. It's just more delicate. It's just it's
very
not
thin,
heavy. Yeah,
very thin crust.
Yeah, very thin
crust. You know, you have to fold it in two, and then you have to turn your head on the side, and then it's kind of like sorry, that didn't sound very good on radio, but you know, it's folding of the pizza.
Yeah, and it's just really. I don't. It just doesn't feel heavy because the fermentation in the dough is much better.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Now, we were just chatting with Raymond Capaldi from Wonder Pies about all of his favourite destinations in New York City. Before we do get back to Raymond, though, I'd like to acknowledge a new member, David, who donated $5 by texting into Joy this morning. Yay! And was a winner of the Saturday Magazine Textbooks competition, has just joined up as a member. Thank you, David. That is fantastic. We are very excited to have you on board.
And but how can we donate? I've got $5 that I don't know what to do with, and I'd like to donate it to Joy. How could I do that?
All you have to do
in the 12 days of Textmas.
You can do this anytime in the next 12 days. All you have to do is donate by texting the word Joy, J-O-Y, to 1-9-949-949. This $5 will appear on your phone bill. It is tax deductible. If you have Vodafone or Telstra, you can do that. If you don't have either of those services, then you can go online and you can donate on the website. It makes it very easy. We've raised lots of money this morning, actually, and there are prizes every day. So you can get a list of all the prizes. So get on board, everyone, and give us a little extra Christmas joy. Raymond, now we're going through your list of all the incredible tasty things. Now, of course, we know that New York can be meltingly hot. I mean, when I lived there and on a really hot day, I wouldn't even bother putting makeup on because it would just like slide off your face. So hot. And of course, so cold. Tell us about some other suggestions that you would have, because a lot of people are thinking about going to New York at this time of the year because New York is an incredible destination for Christmas.
Yep.
So festive, so many trees, ice skating at the Rockefeller Center or in Central Park. It's really beautiful. Let us know a few other places that you would like to suggest.
There's another one. It's called Best Friend, which is BSTFREN, ice cream. And it comes, if you look at their Instagram, it's health and beauty. And it's all about these funky little, soft serve ice creams with different colours and textures. And then you've got all the beautiful gluten-free cakes that they do. So it's a very, very different theme to everything else. And then you've got the big gay ice cream parlour that's in New York, which is fantastic. The two guys there over for Melbourne Food Festival about 4 years ago.
Oh, were they?
Who are just killing it. Yeah, it's fantastic ice cream. Again, it's all different flavours. So there's two great places you can go, Best Friend or the big gay ice cream, which is...
So big gay ice cream, where's that?
That's just down, just off Manhattan.
Okay. Because in the south there's also a Big Boy Bakery, which is
right,
a gay bakery.
Yeah. Well, these guys have released ice cream book as well, and they're very famous over there. So it's a great little place, great looking shop. And I think it's just off Manhattan. I'm maybe off Soho. I'm just trying to get my bearings at the minute, which is just near there. If you go there, and that's and great ice creams.
One of the things I liked to do when I was there was visit Brighton Beach, which is, of course, near the home of Coney Island. And in Brighton Beach, they have these fantastic knishes, which are, of course, like a thin pastry that wraps up like a mashed potato with other ingredients in it. You can have a potato knish, or you can probably have potato with meat in it. But that's a specifically Russian Jewish dish.
Beautiful.
Because there are a lot of Russians that live throughout Manhattan and Coney Island and those areas. So I used to love that. And then my other favorite thing to eat was, of course, they're not always as good when you get them out of the carts at Central Park, but if you could get those big, beautiful, doughy pretzels.
Oh, you can't be a good pretzel.
The good pretzels where they're so crunchy, they're soft on the inside.
Oh, sensational, yeah.
Smother them with, like,
butter,
you know.
Or cream cheese.
Or mustard, like American mustard. Squeeze American mustard on it. So incredible. Oh. That's one of my favourite bites.
I found out with a big gay ice cream, they've got four locations.
Yeah, four, yeah. They're getting big, you know.
There's one in Philadelphia, East Village, so 125th East 7th Street. And there's one at the South Street Seaport, and one in the West Village, which would make the most sense in the world considering that's Manhattan's gay epicentre.
It sure is. Now, what about, I know that Mexican food is, or variations on Mexican food are very popular in New York City.
Yeah, well, there's one young guy called Alex Stupak, and basically he's got Empilon, which is now Alex Stupak was he was from fine dining. He was WD-50. He was all the rage, you know. This young kid. He was from Alinea, which is one of the most famous ones in America. Now Alex Stupak decided he went on a holiday probably to Mexico and he loved the Mexican food, and then he's came back to open Empalon. And that's sensational Mexican food. And he does, you know, he does one ice cream that looks like an avocado. It's probably one of the...
That's interesting.
Yeah, and it would
be a smash here in Melbourne.
Oh, it would. Oh, it'd be a big smash here. That's a good one. And basically, it just looks like an avocado on a plate, but it's probably one of the most photographed dishes on Instagram as well, you know. But Alex Tupac is a fantastic pastry chef that's went on to do these Mexican food, and it's very good Mexican food, and it's Empalon in New York.
I'm going to definitely pass that suggestion on. I'm a massive fan of Mexican food. I just love it. And, of course, I'm just trying to think of some of my other favourite experiences, dining experiences in New York. Of course, there is fantastic Indian food.
Oh, yeah.
There's
another beautiful one called the Stella, and it's basically like a bistro, like a New York bistro, and it's very simple. Young Australian chef there. He runs a kitchen there, and I think every Australian that comes in, they must check and they look after them. But Stella in New York is a place to go as well. It's very great new food, and very simple on flavours and techniques, but they kill it every time, and Estella is sensational. It's just that it's that very relaxing, beautiful service. It's you don't need to wear the big jacket. You can just go in and you feel yourself, you know, instead of trying to feel like someone else.
And of course, there are a lot of Australians not only, you know, owning restaurants and cafes in New York these days, but also lining the kitchens of some of the very best restaurants.
Yes.
You know, we were talking about Madison Park 11. Mm-hmm. What do you think it is about why there's like this sort of flood of Australians that are visiting and working? I mean, they've always gone there, but having an impact on the food scene in New York.
Well, I just think that Melbourne, if Melbourne was next to London, I think we'd be in the race of the best food in the world, you know, because I just think that we have
I know
it's right down, you know, from fine dining right down to simple takeaway. We do stuff really well, you know, and when you go over there and do coffees well and you do all that, we have got the passion and we have got the force to be with, but I think we're just too far away sometimes, you know, for to be noticed. But I think if we're near,
the tyranny of distance gets to people's mind, because I don't think we're far away from anything because I'm here. when I lived in Germany and when I lived in Dubai, for example, a lot of people would just think of Australia as wildly exotic, so far away. And people are astounded at just trying to work out that distance. And it was like, we have the internet, you know, it's not that hard.
But
that's
still
my perspective. But in a lot of other people, that sort of Eurocentricity or United States centricity is...
When you see all my friends, you know, they can go from London to New York in 5 hours.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or in Scotland, you know, London to Edinburgh to New York in 5-6 hours. You know, we can't do that, you know. And I think
that's
where we lose it a little bit. You know, you've got great places like Attica and Bray and all these other restaurants, but we've actually got other great restaurants right underneath these fine dining type restaurants.
So what's a gem to uncover? If somebody wanted to go out for a nice meal, that, you know, a restaurant that's really doing something that's not... Where would you go?
Contra.
Where's Contra?
Contra's in New... Or here, you mean?
Yeah.
Or here? Oh, look. Here, Rambler. Yes, in Chapel Street. I think Rambler is the guy, Nick Stanton, he just puts in so much effort into everything he does. They've got about 3 places. He's got Leonard's House of Chicken or something.
Leonard's House of Love.
Leonard's House of Love. And then they've got Leonard's House of Pizza now. But then they've got Rambler. So basically, I just think this young kid, he really puts a lot into his food. And basically, everything you eat is very tasty.
I did go there for my birthday dinner.
Oh, did you?
I was spoiled. It was delicious, I have to say. Now, I haven't been to the new pizza place. I think it's called Leonardo's.
Apparently
it is packed. So, yeah. You know.
Is that also in the Chapel Street area? Or?
No, that's north.
In Brunswick.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
And Leonard's House of Love, of course, is just a classic bar.
Yeah, classic bar, classic chicken, fried chicken.
I've never eaten there. I've just drunk beer.
Well, there you are. You should go to, you know, as I say, I think it tries really hard. But look, there's always some up-and-coming ones going. That's sort of on my radar.
But we did flash briefly onto New York. You said your place to choose if you were going to pick somewhere is called Contra.
It's called Contra, yeah, which is, again, it's degustation, but I think it's more relaxed than the rest of the places. And you go there and it's great food. It's not stuffy.
Is it in Manhattan or Brooklyn? Sounds Brooklyn.
It's Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Brooklyn, yeah. And it's just stunning. It's beautiful.
Beautiful Brooklyn food. Is certainly the place to be.
Yes, it is.
I mean, I remember when I first went out to Brooklyn, there was like a Thai restaurant called Planet Thai.
Yeah,
and that was like that and just the pizza joints. That was all there was.
Yeah.
So it certainly has come.
Or you were scared to walk down there in case you got murdered, you know. It was really rough, you know. But now you've got that Rooster is there, is another chicken place. But there's great places now, yeah.
Mm.
Wow, I am salivating just thinking about all the dining options.
Yes.
I want to go on the Raymond Capaldi dining tour. I just have to make sure that...
I reckon that's another business for me.
I think that is. You just have to tell people that they need to gird their loins for that many dishes in one day.
Yeah, the alarm goes off at 4:30, so you can be in between the gym between 5 and 6 because you got to earn those three breakfasts.
Exactly.
Well, you know, it's...
And you're walking all day to walk it off.
It's walking. You know, the guy who did... Supersize Me, he actually is a New Yorker, and he, in order to actually have his experiment be true, he had to move away from New York because New Yorkers walk on average like 5 miles a day or something.
Yeah, not surprised.
Eating is a good idea.
Thank you very much for joining
us
today.
Thank you for having me.
One final New York snack. What really can you not go there without having?
You have to have the hot dog.
The hot dog.
The hot dog.
A Nathan's hot dog.
A Nathan's hot dog with lots of mustard. Lots of onions on top,
and
not like bunions underneath.
Yeah.
It's on top.
You know? Yeah. Safety first.
They don't worry about safety there. They just want to eat the hot dog. They're not worried about anything else.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us on the Escape Hour.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation. Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.